You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, interim UW System President Tommy Thompson said this week that lawmakers let him know a tuition increase is off the table for the next state budget. We'll talk about what that means for funding the state's universities in the couple years to come. First, new data came out yesterday on how the country's economy is doing from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. It showed a gross domestic product, GDP, that shrunk for the year 2020 3.5%. But there was growth in the fourth quarter, so a sign maybe of some resilience in the economy to end the year going into this year. Along with that, there's some long-term unemployment, not as bad as the early days of the pandemic, but definitely worse than last year at this time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where did you find yourself economically at the end of 2020? Struggling, surging, hanging in there? When you want to know how the economy is doing, what do you look to? GDP, jobs numbers, stock market, something on the local level? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Thomas Kemp is chair and professor in the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here, Rob. Happy to be here.
Let's tackle this GDP number first. Bad for the year 2020, worse since World War II, I'm reading. But fourth quarter, maybe some positive signs. What do you make of this one indicator?
Yeah, well, certainly it was expected that GDP would decline across 2020. You know, GDP, of course, is a measure of the total expenditures or total incomes that occur in the economy over a given period of time, in this case, a year or so. You know, with a lot of folks sort of sitting it out, you know, often, you know, not that they want to be sitting it out, but with a lot of folks sitting it out these days, you know, it's almost certain you're going to get a contraction.
How much of a straight line is there between GDP, the gross domestic product, this big measurement, and, you know, the daily economic lives for people? Can we really watch this one indicator and say, yeah, that's affecting my daily life?
Yeah, not really. I mean, the best measure of how your own little economy is going is just, you know, how you're doing, right? You know, are you able to, you know, do you have a job, right? I mean, I think there, you know, when I was a student, I remember hearing things like it's a recession when my neighbor loses his job, and it's a depression when I lose my job. And, you know, GDP is an aggregate measure, so it doesn't necessarily tell us a lot about what's going on at the individual level. That said, you know, we like sound bites, so that works.
And then mentioning jobs, let's talk about employment numbers. When I look back at charts over the last year, unemployment really pretty low coming into 2020. Skyrocketed in the early days of the pandemic with shutdowns and people, you know, not wanting to go out or travel and things like that. Better now, but not as good as we were a year ago. Can you talk about what you're seeing in our unemployment numbers?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, things look really rough early on in the year. Boy, I think we talked about it at the time, if I remember rightly.
We did, yeah.
But then there was, you know, the ice sort of thawed and people sort of, I think, started to get a handle on this thing. I mean, I don't think really anybody's very happy about the situation we're in, but I think that a lot of employers and employees are learning to manage it. And that's why we're sort of seeing, you know, those numbers rebound and likely to continue that way.
I've seen a lot of concern at this point, Tom, about a long-term unemployment. This has hit certain industries particularly hard, you know, restaurants, entertainment services, things like that. Are you worried that, okay, even as the employment numbers have improved, there is this group of people who maybe for the first time in their lives are facing unemployment, not just for a month or two, but closing in on a year now?
Yeah, absolutely. The longer a person's unemployed, you know, the more their skills and talents, you know, they atrophy or they become no longer useful in the workplace. And so, you know, people who find themselves in that extremely unfortunate position, you know, anything that they can do and anything that we can do as a society to ensure that their, you know, skills and talents remain up to date or remain in practice, you know, that's going to aid an eventual recovery for sure. And of course, help those folks out too.
Talking to Thomas Kemp from the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire, looking at a lot of economic news out there as the pandemic goes on. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about our overall economy? How have you been affected by the twists and turns in the pandemic? Not on the health side of things, but your employment, your business, if you own one. How has your job been affected, if at all? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go to a caller now. Alex is with us in Prairie du Chien. Alex, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to throw my hat in the ring here. I lost my job in the 2008 recession, and I also lost my job during the pandemic. Obviously, they were about, you know, 9-10 years apart. The first time I lost my job, I did not have an emergency fund, you know, rent and utilities and all that for, you know, 6 months or a year. This time around, I had a very substantial emergency fund, and the difference that it had was absolutely night and day, especially with my mental health, because I don't really have to worry about what the market is doing or the economy. I'm set for a year, and you know, I'm a single male, so it's easy for me, obviously. But with, you know, this materialistic world we're in, perhaps people could, you know, not purchase things and maybe sock that money away for an emergency fund so they feel relaxed in, you know, when the world's in chaos. Thank you.
Alex, thanks for sharing your story. Good luck getting a job back on track. Glad you have the emergency fund in the meantime. And Thomas, I know even before the pandemic, I've had conversations over the years that a lot of people are in that position where they don't have that emergency fund. You know, a $300 hit could be a big deal, much less a month's long job loss. Can you talk about that sort of precarious condition that a lot of people, even employed people, found themselves in?
Yeah, that the caller brings up a really good point. You know, and it's really, really great that he has that emergency fund that does make things a lot better. I know I usually try to follow that kind of practice in my own life of living a little beneath my means. But it's true, you know, a lot of folks don't have that luxury. There's a whole lot of folks out there that just aren't, you know, they aren't earning, or for whatever reason they're not able to put aside you know, funds to develop that sort of rainy day fund, as it were. And so they're, you know, in a really precarious spot when we do have these downturns. You know, now we're in the middle of everything. We're talking about the sort of stimulus plan and everything. When we look at that, you know, a lot of those things in that stimulus plan are designed to sort of carry people over who don't have those emergency funds and are really, really in a tight spot at this point.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I've seen some positive outlooks, Tom, looking at the last quarter and an uptick. I've seen some people worried that, okay, as enhanced unemployment ran out for a while, now it's picking up again. Some of the initial stimulus money might have helped keep the economy afloat. Most of that's gone, the $600 checks out there. Worries that, you know, as that stimulus dries up and if it's not renewed, that we could be sinking again in the early part of 2021. I won't ask you to predict the future, but what are you watching for to see if that's happening?
Well, hang on. Let me get my crystal ball out here.
Predict if you want, but.
Yeah, remains a very serious concern. It's a lot of the policies that were put into place throughout 2020 were due to run out or will run out in the near future, or have run out in the near past. And that's what's been keeping a lot of folks going. And, you know, when we look at household incomes and things like that, they're actually reasonably stable. But the reason why, you know, things have been reasonably stable and why we're sort of seeing things recover a fair bit has to be in part due to those income continuation programs. And so as long as we're sort of stuck in this sort of holding pattern, it's going to be very hard for us not to continue those things or to put a lot of people in sort of financial calamity.
We're talking with economist Tom Kemp from UW-Eau Claire about the U.S. economy, where we've been, where we are, where we could be going. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how the elements of today's economy work, about the headlines you see in the news, and how it's all affected you. Were you out of work? Are you out of work because of the pandemic? How has that affected your life? Do you own a business? How is that going? 800-642-1234. And coming up, we're going to check out the stock market and how it does and doesn't reflect the economy. Do you invest in the stock market as an individual? Do you make stock picks? Do you have retirement bound up in it? Or are you not affected directly by the stock market? Call 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Tom Kemp, chair and professor in the UW-Eau Claire Department of Economics, looking at just all that economic news out there and the state of affairs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Jessica is with us in Eau Claire. Jessica, hi.
Hi. Say, I was wondering as to, in regards to the stimulus checks, how are... I guess I don't understand as to how they're being issued, seeing that the government is so far in debt. How can they start shelling out extra money that, you know, looking at a bank account that we don't have?
Jessica, thanks for the call. Tom, when the government's spending money while already in debt, where's the money come from and what impact can that have on the economy?
Sure, yeah. Well, it's a good question. The details of federal deficit spending are a little dry, but suffice it to say that the federal government can essentially authorize the Treasury to conduct whatever purchases that it wishes. If the federal government does not have sufficient funds on hand to pay for those, then the Treasury will issue debt to cover those additional expenditures. So in other words, it will issue treasury debt out to the public to do that. So just like, you know, if you or I didn't have any cash on hand and we wanted to, you know, go buy something, right, we can borrow that money. It's a little different when the federal government does it. It's actually considerably easier for them, but that's the essence of it.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Tom, wanted to talk about the stock market that did take a hit early in the pandemic, but then it bounced back in a lot of ways faster than the country did from the pandemic, faster than the unemployment numbers in a lot of ways. I think it hit record levels later in the year. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's some crazy stuff, boy. And I'm not going to pretend to have all the answers there, especially what's going on in the last couple of days.
And we'll be having another conversation about that in just a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you've got that one coming up. I think it's important for listeners to understand that the values that the stock market the value of the stock market is not necessarily reflective of the state of the general economy. You know, in theory, right, the value of a stock is sort of the discounted value of the firm's future cash flows. But, you know, of course, you can pull the price of a thing up by a lot of people wanting it too, right? You know, think of any sort of Christmas fad thing, right? Everybody rushes to the store to get it. And the same goes with stocks. And so you could have a situation where the sort of underlying fundamentals of the economy are weaker. I don't want to suggest that they're weak right now, but you could have a situation where they're weaker and the stock price surges because people just think they want it, right? They want to buy those stocks. And, you know, that's clearly part of the story of what's been going on in the last few days. It's not about underlying market fundamentals at all.
And we'll get an explainer on the GameStop, et cetera, story coming up in about half an hour or so. Right now, we're talking about the economy in general. Tom Kemp stays with us, chair and professor at the UW-Eau Claire Department of Economics. And with you at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sean with us now in Green Bay. Sean, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Sean?
I just want to share some insight about the industry that I'm in. I'm a small business owner in the live audio entertainment industry. And basically, a lot of small audio companies like myself are tanking if they have not already tanked due to lack of support from the government, whether it be not being qualified for the PPP because we don't have enough employees, or not having a brick and mortar establishment since we're independent contractors, et cetera. And a lot of my peers have already kind of sunken under and disappeared. And I don't know how I've been doing it, but I'm still staying afloat and paying the bills of my audio company. But it's coming pretty soon. I don't think I'll be able to continue doing it anymore unless we get a little more assistance, because concerts are all but gone now. So,
well, Sean, as a musician and a music fan, I appreciate the work you do. I hope you're able to make it through this. And thank you for sharing your story. Tom, Sean is in one of these categories of businesses hit especially hard by the pandemic. And he's saying the attempts by the government to help those businesses weather the storm here for him and for his peers falling short. Is there more you think that could have been done, could still be done for small businesses that are hit like this?
Yeah, I really feel for Sean and folks who are in similar positions. This has been, you know, toughest on them, and well, tough on a lot of people, but really tough on those smaller businesses. And unfortunately, you know, people fall through the cracks. It's my understanding that that at least the main proposal that's being kicked around now does include aid for businesses like Sean's. But, you know, we'll see what the final packages end up looking like. I think there's a lot of folks in that in Sean's position, and I would really hope that policymakers, you know, sort of take those stories seriously, because the more people we can keep doing what they do well, right? So the more we can keep people doing the things that they love, doing the things that they have been employed to do, the smoother the eventual recovery from this situation is going to be. If all those folks have to start up new businesses, start up new careers, you know, they're not really going to be able to hit the ground running very effectively, and the recovery will be considerably slower. So anything we can do to keep them, you know, doing their thing, that's going to help in the longer run.
Thanks a lot for that call, Sean. Good luck to you. We'll go to Tony now in Okano County. Tony, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad. I'm actually on the other end of the spectrum. I actually prospered during 2020.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm an independent contractor that drives semi, a company of one person, one truck. And I haul groceries. I haul beef out and usually produce or cheeses back. And I've been running so hard that I barely get home. But I knew that stuff was coming, and I had put all my extra money off to the side. So I've got between 4 to 5 years worth of mortgage payments already in a separate account that I can't touch. So I don't have to worry about that. And I made about $35,000 more last year than I did each of the previous 3 years.
Tony, thank you so much for sharing that story. I appreciate it. I'm glad you're doing well. And Tom, I've seen there's been a shift from experience type businesses like restaurants or concerts, as Sean was talking about, to buying stuff like Tony carries in his truck. And some people have done well with this. Can you talk about who's ended up doing pretty well in the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anybody, you know, first of all, that's a great story. And it's nice to hear that mm-hmm. you know, some folks are doing good with this and have been prudent financial planners. Anybody who's been able to sort of keep working as they regularly would is doing relatively well in all this, because of course there's fewer people doing it. So those folks are having to work longer hours and in some cases get paid more for doing so. Right. And it sounds like the caller has been able to work more hours and also get paid more for doing so. So that's great. That's great to hear. A lot of people are working longer hours and harder that are, you know, salaried folks and aren't getting paid more too. so there's a lot of different stories and everything across the spectrum sort of in all this. But I want to go back to the one point that the caller mentioned about sort of living, you know, putting money aside. That's always a good, you know, having, if you can, right? I don't mean to imply that everybody can do this, but if you can, having a bit of a rainy day fund is almost never a bad idea.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller. Shannon is with us in Nelson. Shannon, hi.
Hi, Hi.
What's your economic story, Shannon?
I just wanted to mention that I run a small business. We are completely e-commerce online here in Wisconsin, where we sell poultry, hatching eggs, that type of thing. And our business in particular is booming. We've quadrupled, if not more, sales since the pandemic, the shutdown last March. And we've hired more people, working longer hours, more pay, that type of stuff. So where I understand there's, and I'm not calling to brag, I'm calling because I just wanted to mention that there are aspects of the pandemic, self-sufficiency to be one of them, that I think has really kind of hit and maybe taught a lesson or whatnot here in Wisconsin as well, and probably throughout the nation. So.
Interesting. Shannon, thanks for the call. Tom, along those lines, do you think that, you know, we're going to come out of this different? This is going to have a lasting impact. Self-sufficiency businesses like Shannon's are going to be here to stay maybe more than they were before.
Yeah, it's always difficult. Even my crystal ball can't handle that one. It's always difficult to predict sort of long run consumer patterns. But, we do know the story of the Great Depression, and we do know that event, yielded a generation of individuals who were more self-sufficient, who did, put aside more of those rainy day funds, who were ready for difficulties, let's say. So it's certainly possible that could happen again coming out of this.
Well, thanks for sharing that story. And Tom, thanks for joining us again today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, Rob. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Tom Kemp is chair and professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. We talked to him today about some recent figures on the U.S. economy from 2020, some late year growth, but overall not great, and some sustained unemployment going along with it, and what to watch for as we move on from here. Coming up, we'll get some of the latest on funding and budget issues in the UW system. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, you might have seen the headlines. The prices of GameStop and other stocks went unexpectedly through the roof this month. Meanwhile, the surge is devastating some big Wall Street investors. We'll get to the bottom of what's going on coming up. Now, the state will be working on another two-year budget cycle this year, and as always, funding for the University of Wisconsin system is one of the big ticket items. Last year, interim UW System President Tommy Thompson proposed a budget with $96 million of additional money, a plan approved by the UW Regents. But Thompson said in a meeting on Monday that regardless of what the final result of the budget process is, it's probably not going to include tuition increases.
And I have been told in no uncertain terms by the leadership of the legislature that if I come in with a tuition increase, the budget is not going to go anywhere.
Last month, a report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that state revenues going toward higher education in Wisconsin have dropped in recent years, ranking it below Midwestern neighbors. Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. He's been following this. Rich, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, as we mentioned, Tommy Thompson and the Regents had this initial budget proposal to throw at the state, including $96 million in additional funding. What has he said about the plans for that money?
Well, Tommy Thompson, as always, has big plans. He's part of what he'd like to do, I think probably the biggest portion of this additional $96 million in state funding that he and the rest of the system are seeking, which works out to 3.5% increase over the last budget. It would expand something that's been happening at UW-Madison statewide. And what Thompson's calling it is the Wisconsin Tuition Promise. So in essence, it would pay for 4 years worth of tuition and fees, like everything, for first-year students, freshmen, coming from households making $60,000 or less. It would also pay for 2 years worth of tuition and fees for transfer students coming from households making that same amount. And UW-Madison has been doing this under what's called the Bucky's Tuition Promise since 2018. And last year, they had their biggest group of students enroll in the program. It was 923. So that's part of it. Other things that Thompson wants to do with his budget request: expand online education, and advance a loan forgiveness program for teachers, people going into teaching and school administration.
One other way for schools to get money, apart from asking the state for it, would be to increase tuition. But we've got this long-time tuition freeze in Wisconsin, and it doesn't look like that's going away. Talk about the politics of tuition, Rich.
Well, you heard that quote, and I was actually pretty surprised to hear Interim President Thompson be that blunt about it during the Wisconsin Policy Forum discussion. So the tuition freeze, the one that everyone kind of is most aware of, I think, is the freeze at four-year universities. And that started in 2013. So we're talking like 8 years of no increases in tuition. And for the two-year colleges, it's been longer, actually, something more like 12 years, I believe. And I could be actually on the conservative side. So the amount of tuition per student hasn't changed at all in that time. And during that same conversation, that webinar that Thompson mentioned, the no-go on tuition increases, Chancellor Blank, UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank, mentioned that, you know, tuition has been frozen, but her costs are not. Costs for everything, including, you know, good services and also compensation has been going up. So she referred to it, I forget the exact term, but essentially a price control. And she said it's time to let that go. President Thompson basically said it wasn't even on the table. But I did remember him saying that he acknowledged, I guess, when he met with legislative leadership, which means Republicans, that he said, okay, if you're not going to give me tuition increases, you know, bonding needs to be on the table.
And yeah, let's talk about bonding. Apparently, I didn't know this. A lot of colleges around the country, public ones for that matter, can issue bonds to raise money. Wisconsin public school colleges, not so easy. What's the deal here?
Well, I'm still fuzzy on it as well, but from what I understand, the university can't take out any large loans, you know, bonds, or they can't borrow without approval from the state legislature. And recently, last summer, before President Thompson took over as head of the UW system, former UW system president Ray Cross sent a letter to Governor Evers and legislative leaders asking for a special session. And one of the things that he wanted the legislature to do was to grant it bonding authority. And what they've said, administration officials have said, that essentially the $1 billion in bonding authority would help them take out, you know, loans for emergency costs to, you know, backfill some of the losses from COVID-19. Of course, the special session for the UW system didn't happen. And I'll really be interested to see whether or not the legislature okays this bonding authority for the UW system. It was a former state Senate leader, majority leader, Scott Fitzgerald, said that he would talk about it with his caucus members, but that there were prior concerns to financial handling by the UW system. So there's a trust issue there still.
Talking to WPR reporter Rich Kramer about the funding situation for the UW system as we go into a budget negotiation year at the state level. And Rich, the Wisconsin Policy Forum, you mentioned them earlier, they had a report on how state revenues going toward higher education stack up Wisconsin versus other states. What kind of things did they find?
Well, they found it was a great report, really in depth. I mean, really in the weeds, as we say, in the news side of things. But some of the takeaways that I thought most interesting was that, you know, between the year 2000 and 2019, state and local funding, that is tax revenues, going towards college students of all types, that's not just the UW system, but also technical colleges, dropped from more than $10,000 per student to just under $7,000 per student. And that is the 2019 level was nearly 17% below the national average. Between 2011 and 2019, state and local revenues dropped by the sixth highest rate in the Midwest. So there have been other reports, national reports, that have showed that among states within the Great Lakes region, for example, Wisconsin is last in terms of the state tax dollars going to university campuses.
And you mentioned, Rich, the impact of COVID-19. What has that looked like for the UW system in terms of revenue and I guess enrollment of students?
Well, the impacts have been significant, and I think that they're still tallying all of the impacts, because there's been not only a decrease in revenues from things like athletics, UW-Madison, that really was a big factor there. Chancellor Blank at UW-Madison has said that their impact is something more than $300 million, and that's, you know, over the past year up to today. And this is all still ballpark stuff, but the other thing that they had to do as a system was refund students in last spring who, when the governor's Safer at Home order happened, students basically went home and colleges refunded them for unused residence, dorm fees and dining fees. So that right away was like a $70 million hit to the UW system. There's also been, two lapses ordered by Governor Tony Evers, a budget lapses, essentially cut your budget. And right at the tail end of the last UW system budget, they had to reduce, I think it was like more than $40 million. And that was really painful for them. So, and enrollment has been impacted. The UW system as a whole saw enrollment go down about 2%, but which was actually not as bad as system leaders expected based on some of the surveys that had been out there. But when you dig down into the numbers, it's not as rosy. So some of the four-year universities like UW-Platteville and UW-Stout saw enrollment drop by something like 5 or 6%. Some of the two-year branch campuses, Baraboo, Sauk County, for example, and Richland, dropped by more than 30%. So it's been pretty bad. But there have been some universities like UW-Green Bay, Stevens Point, and Madison, and Parkside that saw enrollment go up a little bit. So it's really a mixed bag.
A lot of moving parts to watch for in a budget year. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. He joined us for a look at the funding picture for the UW system. Coming up, we'll sort out what's going on with GameStop, including Reddit, Robinhood, and some of the other headlines you might have been seeing this week. That's up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, crowds take to the streets in India and Russia. Europe turns up the heat on AstraZeneca, and the new U.S. Secretary of State gets to work. Hear more on the Friday News Roundup today at 6. Now, a year ago, you could buy a share of the video game retailer GameStop for $4. Today, it'll cost you $325. Earlier this week, more than $500. Why this huge boom for a largely brick-and-mortar business? Are people flocking to their physical stores and buying just tons and tons of video games? No, it has to do with a bunch of amateur investors in an online chat room who decided to start buying up the stock. At the same time, some big money Wall Street firms who thought the stock would tank are getting clobbered. Same thing going on with some other stocks, BlackBerry, AMC, the movie theater chain, and more. Now members of Congress may get involved. Akani Otani is a reporter who covers the U.S. stock market and investing at the Wall Street Journal. Akani, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the who, first of all. There's this category of investors brought in, I think, by brokerages that didn't charge fees for transactions. Who are these investors that got the ball rolling here?
Well, a big chunk of this group appears to have originated from this Reddit forum called Wall Street Bets. It's a totally sort of crude, off-the-cuff online venue where people have been chatting for years about different stock trades that are extremely risky and extremely volatile. But it really has become sort of the center of this whole drama, because there was one particular user on this forum who the journal actually spoke to who had tremendous success. He made tens of millions of dollars $1,000 betting on things like GameStop. And as he posted sort of the receipts and showed everyone how successful his trades had been, other people on the forum sort of piled in. And what started off as kind of a joke, because I think a lot of these traders were quite cognizant of the fact that GameStop as a business has been struggling for quite some time, turned into this sort of revolution online. And we just kept seeing people pile in and pile in. And this week it ended up, the stock actually ended up 400%. So you can see that something that started out in this relatively obscure forum for a lot of people actually ended up making big waves this week.
Now, part two, consequences. There were some companies, big Wall Street companies, you understand, who bet the other way on GameStop and these other companies. They thought they were going to go down. They were heavily invested in the future of these companies going down. What happened as these stocks shot up, driven in large part by these individual investors?
Well, those hedge funds were really, really stung by these gains, because they were actually short GameStop. So there was this one hedge fund called Melvin Capital. It had a huge short position. It was betting on the stock price falling. And of course, as the stock price kept rising and rising, it was getting increasingly sort of squeezed out of that position. And so it actually ended up having to have sort of an emergency infusion of cash. Two other hedge funds actually stepped in and provided some funding to just help shore up Melvin Capital. So it was kind of a just surreal moment, because these individual traders witnessed that they actually, for maybe one of the first times, had a real effect on really big hedge funds that they perceived as sort of running the show for a long time.
Another name people may be seeing in headlines if they're trying to keep up with this: Robinhood, this trading app. What is it?
It is really one of the biggest drivers of this movement in the last couple of years to democratize trading. It's been commission free, so anyone who has a phone can just download the app and within a couple of minutes get set up. And it has things like fractional trades, so even if you don't have enough money to buy all of GameStop, you could just put in a fraction of the share price and own stocks that way. And it also has the ability for people to do options trades, which are typically riskier. And one of the ways that people have been betting on GameStop and other shares like AMC rising. So it is basically the heart of the controversy here, because there have been increasing questions, I think, in the last couple of days about the actions it's taken to temporarily curb some of the trading, and also questions from lawmakers who've been asking whether its actions were actually improper.
So we've got this company, Robinhood. It's democratizing the stock market, helping the little guy. But hang on, I'm reading that Robinhood goes to big Wall Street companies like Citadel, which pays them to handle these investments. So how does that all fit together? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of wrinkle there. And that was actually a source of controversy and almost sort of a conspiracy theory Thursday, because there was some speculation quickly spreading online on Twitter and on Reddit and Wall Street Bets that because of the Citadel link, that was why Robinhood decided to curb limiting Thursday in GameStop, AMC, and other things, where basically users were finding if they logged in, they could close out their position, but they couldn't add to their positions. They couldn't keep trying to drive the stock price higher. We found actually in our reporting that a bunch of the brokerages, including Robinhood, said it had nothing to do with the hedge funds. They weren't bullied into making that decision. Instead, it kind of had something to do with a little bit, I guess, less sexy sort of financial plumbing. There's the DTCC, which helps run a lot of the plumbing sort of behind the scenes in financial markets. And it was basically telling a bunch of firms that they needed to have more money on hand in order to handle the amount of one-sided trading going on. So that's the reason that the brokerages were giving. But of course, the controversy has continued. And a bunch of lawmakers, as well as the SEC, have said that they're still going to look into what happened.
Talking to Akani Otani with the Wall Street Journal, looking at this story of GameStop and other stocks expected to go down. Individual investors help drive them way, way up. Controversy ensues. Connie, you mentioned legality here. Do we know if anything illegal has happened, either from investors, individual investors working together to try to manipulate a stock price, or companies stopping their customers from making bids or making purchases without warning? I don't know. These laws are complicated, I know.
Yeah, and that's why it's going to take quite some time, I think, for us to really get to the bottom of this. I mean, the SEC, for its part, is, I think, primarily concerned about market manipulation. So it has said that it's looking through posts that users submitted on Wall Street Bets to see potentially, you know, are there signs of market manipulation? But, you know, it's not actually as cut and dry as you might think, because a lot of the cases that in the past regulators have gone after have been more instances where individuals actually just put out false information knowingly. Like they might have said something like, this company has terrific prospects, and, you know, tried to bid up the price of the stock by selling false information. That's not what's going on here. I mean, I think a lot of the users on Wall Street Bets recognize that a lot of these companies have very poor prospects, and that what's happening with their stock price has really very little to do with the fundamentals and more to do with squeezing out big short sellers, these big hedge funds. So I think that that'll be an interesting thing to watch. And then, of course, on the part of Robinhood and other brokerages, there's already been a lawsuit lodged against Robinhood customers alleging that it failed to meet their obligations that it sort of promised by cutting off access, and people saying that they lost out on opportunities to make money Thursday. So it'll be interesting to see on both fronts if the brokerages and also if the Reddit users end up coming under closer scrutiny and end up potentially getting punished.
And I've seen concerns, Akani, that this is in effect a bubble. Some people in on it early, helping drive up these prices, are going to make a lot of money if they get out. Somebody's going to be caught with a very high-priced, say, GameStop stock, and it's not a company that's going to suddenly become more successful. Some people could stand to lose just a lot of money, right?
Yeah, I was talking to an investor who's been following bubbles for a very long time, Jeremy Grantham, and he had some interesting thoughts. I mean, he was saying, if you're an investor like me, you don't invest in things like GameStop and AMC at this point. You're really sort of buying a lottery ticket. You're a speculator because there's really no telling when this will stop. I've talked to some individuals who are saying, yeah, I'm going to cash out next week because I think this is a ticking time bomb. And then I've talked to some other individuals who've been adamant. They think this thing could keep going for quite some time. So it definitely is a very risky play. And I think something that attracts a very particular demographic of traders.
Now, we don't know where this is going to go from day to day, Akani, but this is something new and different on the market. Is there concern that this entry of these individual investors, the power they have to do something is, I don't know, introducing a new, weird, uncertain element into the market?
I think what's important to remember is we're still not at the point where these forums are necessarily driving the overall market. Mm-hmm. It really is a handful of names that have been talked up that we're seeing the biggest amount of volatility in. You know, interestingly, even though a bunch of these stocks did really, really well this week, the overall stock market ended up falling. So it really is kind of two different phenomena. But at the same time, I think there are a number of investors who view this proliferation of day trading and speculative activity as just one piece of a puzzle that is getting a little bit scary. I mean, we're seeing a huge number of IPOs on Wall Street. We're seeing a huge number of companies doing secondary listings and they're selling more shares. We're seeing a huge number of people going into things like Bitcoin. Was touching a record high earlier this month. So when you combine all of those things, it does start to get you wondering if we're at the top or near the top of some kind of speculative bubble of excess, or if this is just, you know, part one of a phenomenon that could continue for a long time.
Well, no matter what happens next, it's going to keep you busy, I imagine. Akani, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Akani Otani is a reporter who covers the U.S. stock market and investing at the Wall Street Journal. We talked to her today about what's going on with this GameStop trading frenzy. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Monday at 8, if you made resolutions to eat better and take care of your health in 2021, well, we're now 1 month in and your motivation might just be slipping. A dietitian joins the show with advice on sticking with your health goals. That's Monday at 8 on The Morning Show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then the highest-ranked transgender military veteran in the country joins the show to talk about President Biden's executive order that overturns a ban on transgender people serving openly in the U.S. military. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.